Well, hello, folks, and welcome to another edition of My Car Guru. This one is being broadcasted live from El Casa de Lawson. No, it's really not. Well, it is being broadcasted from my home, but my house is not El Casa de Lawson. I don't name my house. That would be an insult to houses. But I do like where I live. I've got a beautiful mountain view. You know, if you live in East Tennessee and don't have a mountain view, then you built your house in the wrong place, because I don't know how you avoid it, but I really do like looking at the mountains. I just drove back, well, last night, my wife and I drove back from Cincinnati. We took our grandson home. He lives just outside of there. And I had to stop at Bucky's in Richmond. I always say when I say Richmond, Virginia, because that's, I guess, the original Richmond. This is Richmond, Kentucky. My dad almost bought a dealership there back in 1970. We were trying to decide between Marion, Indiana, Lenoir, North Carolina, Richmond, Kentucky, or Greenville, Tennessee. And they decided Greenville, Tennessee was a place for us, and the rest is history. Now you have a guru broadcasting on this radio station and doing podcasts, probably because of that. If not, I would have attended the University of, or West Virginia University, as opposed to the University of Tennessee. Probably would have married a girl from St. Albans, West Virginia, instead of the one I lucked out meeting down here in Tennessee. Isn't it funny how your parents' decisions affect the lives of the kids in good and bad ways? All of mine were good ways, though, so I'm not complaining. But anyway, had to stop at Bucky's. Talk about a brilliant, totally out-of-the-box concept. You know, in the age of low-fat yogurt, sunflower seeds, I guess joggers in tight leggings, when you think about brisket and jerky and deer feeders, Bucky's is just the polar opposite of what's, I guess, what people value in modern society. And I think that's why it's so successful. You know, when you have 150, 200 gas pumps and you can just leave your vehicle there while you're filling it up and go inside and go to the cleanest bathrooms I've ever seen. And they even display artwork in the bathroom. And yeah, that artwork is for sale. And so just the food, the branded merchandise, you know, you don't go in there to anticipating it's a clothing store and a souvenir store and a home fix-it-up store and a brisket store and a jerky store and deer feeders and grills and coolers and ice and just a marvelous creation. This one, as I said, is in Richmond, Kentucky. They're getting ready to build one in Sevierville, Tennessee, just outside of Pigeon Forge, outside of Knoxville, Tennessee, home of Dollywood. And it is going to be the biggest Bucky's, I believe. But not to be outdone, I think the people of Texas, where Bucky started, have pitched a royal fit about the Bucky's in Sevierville, or I believe it's really in Kodak, Tennessee. Wonder how they got that name. You know, in Kingsport, Tennessee, there used to be, well, there still is a company called Tennessee Eastman, but it used to be called Eastman Kodak. And Kodak went away when people started using film, or stopped using film in cameras. There's still some diehards out there that use film, just like they're diehards like me that drive old cars and enjoy it. So I don't know where the Sevierville line city limits is or Kodak city limit. All I know is it's just continuous places to buy stuff, spend money, be entertained, and so forth. I am sure that they will break records this year as far as attendance to the Smoky Mountains, because Bucky's has been added to the mix. We shall see. Well, today's kind of an exciting day. I get to go look at a collection of 14 classic vehicles. I really don't know what I'm getting ready to see in total. I know a couple of them. One of them is a 1957 Chevrolet that I won't get into details on because I really don't want to give it away or violate any privacy of this person. But so what they want to know is what's the best way to maximize the return on these particular vehicles. Now, that puts a lot of burden on me which I don't mind. I don't mind burden. I've had plenty of burdens. But this is the kind of burden that, you know, when you're talking, when you're messing with somebody else's money, you got to be careful and you want to be accurate. And so I'm going to look at these vehicles and I'm going to determine the best venue to dispose of them. Now, a lot of people think, why don't you sell it on Barrett Jackson? Well, Barrett Jackson is in Scottsdale, Arizona. What would it cost to get a vehicle from Greenville, Tennessee to Scottsdale, Arizona? I'll tell you, about $3,000 if you want to send it in an enclosed trailer. So multiply that times 14 if you wanted to run them all at Barrett Jackson. Another thing about Barrett Jackson and Mecum and a lot of the other auctions that you see on TV is that they charge a really big percentage, anywhere from 10 to 12% to the buyer and to the seller. So if you sell a car for $100,000, you're only going to get $88,000. And the buyer is going to have to pay an additional $12,000 in order to get that car. So the auction houses make a lot of money that way. Now, my favorite way to sell vehicles is either to somebody that I know and or, you know, as I've mentioned a million times on this show, bringatrailer.com, because it's so simple. They only charge the seller $99 and they charge the buyer 5%. So that's why people love it so much. So we'll see. I'll give you an update later on. I'm also, the next day I'm going to see a collection of four vehicles. Now, one of these vehicles is in running condition. The other three are not. In fact, all three have to be restored. One is fairly close. The others don't have engines in them. And they are very, very rusty. Now, they've been inside for the last 35 or 40 years. But they are in rough condition. So, you know, that whole collection there is you're going to have a different answer for each one of those. You can't just take a hunk of rusty metal to Barrett Jackson or someplace like that. Now, you can sell a project car. There are a lot of people out there that will buy a project car that's already had a bunch of stuff done to it. I'll get into that here in just a minute. You know, I've got several project cars going right now, more than my daughters would like me to have, more than I probably need. But, you know, I've got to do something in my semi-retirement. You know, as I've said many times, I am 25% retired, and that's as good as it's going to get. So I'm going to have fun. I've got that 1948 Lincoln Continental. You know what I've decided to do with that thing? You know, it is a beautiful car. It was restored, I would say, somewhere around 1980. So it's a very old restoration, and the paint looks bad. I mean, it has greatly deteriorated. But what I might do is sand that car down and clear coat it. That's a big thing right now. People, a lot of car buyers like patina. I'm talking about antique car buyers. They like to see the rust. They don't, you know, they're not really that into museum pieces. They want something they can drive, something they can enjoy. And that's made it a lot easier on people like me who like to restore cars because we don't really have to. We just have to sand them down and clear coat them. And what is that? Well, that is just instead of a paint with a color, it's paint without color. It's just clear. And you sand the cars down, and you don't, and that does not have to be perfect either. They can be bumpy, and this car will be. I mean, this car has a lot of cracks in the paint. It's got places where rust is starting to come through. But my goodness, the body on this vehicle is absolutely gorgeous. I put it on Facebook the other day, and people said, "What is that?" And as I said, look it up, or Google it. It's a 1948 Lincoln Continental convertible, and it is longer than a Chevy Suburban. I mean, it is a ship. A big boat is what it looks like with these big pontoon fenders. Almost looks like it would float, but it won't. So, you know, the patina route is a good way to go. I had a gentleman call me not too long ago. He wanted me to come look at his 63 Chevrolet Impala. Now, you know, when somebody calls me and says that, my first thought is, okay, two-door, hardtop, big block engine, four-speed in the floor, and all original. Nope. Now, this was a four-door automatic with a six-cylinder. So, you know, you hate to break it to somebody. He was wondering what to do with that car. And my advice, after seeing the pictures and stuff, was just, I mean, do you love the car? Yes, I love the car. Just get it running and enjoy driving it. Because, you know, if you put a whole bunch of money in that car, it's not going to be worth any more than it is now before you start. And so, you know, you've just got to think about, you know, what's the end game here? Now, in most of my situations when I'm restoring a car, my end game is to sell it. You know, that's where 90% of what I do as far as old cars are concerned. Of course, I'm a new car dealer. I sell a lot of new cars. And, yeah, they're semi-interesting now, not like they used to be. I've got all these young people helping me run my store so I can get on here and talk and play with old cars. But while I'm playing, I'm also trying to make money. And I have to leave myself enough profit margin to be able to do that. You know, because what if I pick something like, okay, I really don't know what this 48 Lincoln's going to do. I know that they're rare. You don't see them every day. You rarely see one at a car show. And for that reason, I think that I can do well with it. Now, if I were to do a frame-off restoration on this vehicle, I'm talking about completely disassemble it and try to make it look like a new car. This particular car, it would probably cost between $150,000 and $200,000 to do that. Now, what's that car worth when I'm done? It's worth about $100,000. So you can see why that would be a terrible investment. But based on what I have in the car now, if I just get it running, get it safe, and do this little, you know, patina preservation project, then I know that I can spend maybe $8,000 to $10,000, and I still have plenty of room as far as margin is concerned. Now, I see a lot of hot rods. I see a lot of vehicles. I had a gentleman in the showroom the other day showing me pictures of a car that he had done. And I looked at it, and I was impressed with his mechanical abilities, but it's not something that's going to be worth, you know, any kind of money like you see the hot rods on Barrett Jackson and different places, all these different auction sites. It's not done to that level. It's just a homemade hot rod. Now, you know, if he's not doing that to enjoy, you know, the process of restoring a vehicle and doing it with your own hands, you know, that has its own rewards. But, you know, what's the end game here? So I asked him that. He said, I just want to keep the car and drive it. I just want to say that I have done this. It's something I've always wanted to do, and I will be happy with that. And I said, God bless you. That is exactly what you need to be doing. You know, because too many people have these expectations. And there are a lot of vehicles out there right now that people are wanting to sell. A lot of these baby boomers, you know who I'm talking about. They've had these cars and they've had these projects and they're sitting there and they're just, you know, taking up room in the garage. And it's just something that they never got around to. Or they have a garage full of cars or multiple garages and warehouses full of cars and they're just tired of it. They don't want to do it anymore. They don't want to go to any car shows. You know, they want to go, but they don't want to show their car because it's too much work. It's a lot of work getting a vehicle ready to show. So, you know, you just have to really plan and sit down and think about it. You know, I've been thinking about how can I strategize and talk my wife into letting me buy another camper. And as we were driving down from Cincinnati, I just kind of introduced the subject by saying this. Hey, honey, don't we need some toilet paper for the camper? Yeah, we probably need some toilet paper. I said, I think I also need some, the stuff that you put in the toilet, you know, so that it processes. And so, you know what I'm talking about. I'm not going to get into details, but it's something that makes it all smell nice and pretty. I think we need some of that as well. She said, okay, well, that's fine. You know what my real motive was? To get her to go look at a camper. And I hope she doesn't listen to this radio show because, well, she knows me well. She probably knew that all along. But I just wanted to look at this big fifth wheel. And then I started thinking about it. And she said, you know, our camper's just fine. And it is. You know, it's only 34 feet long. I mean, surely it sleeps 8. Surely that's enough. But being in the car business has ruined me, as they say around here. it's ruined me as far as being satisfied with something. But I don't think I have any choice on this front. So we're going camping this weekend, as a matter of fact. I have got to go, after I get done with the radio show, I've got to go hook up my camper and pull it out of the storage building, and we'll start getting it loaded up. We're going to this new place in near Sevierville. It's called Dandridge, Tennessee. It's on a big old TVA lake here called Douglas Lake, and the campground is called Anchors Down. And I'd heard a lot about it. I mean, it is. I've seen the pictures, and it is a beautiful place. Never been there in person, but if it's anything like the pictures, and, you know, it must be special because it took me about 10 tries to actually get a reservation. So we shall see. I'm going to try to spend 3 nights there, and we'll get the grandkids down and check it out. I asked her, you know, honey, how come we never were lake people? You know, there's a lot of lakes around here. And she said, I don't know. I guess it's something that's handed down, you know, and that's another, that just shows how smart she is, because that's probably true. You know, people who are lake people had parents who were lake people, and their parents were probably lake people. I know it's true with antique cars and the car business. If you're in a car business, and or if your parents are in a car business, you'll probably be in a car business. It's just, it's like an infection, I guess. Okay, I'll take my last break. I'll be back here in just a minute. Okay, I am back. You know, I'm willing to make you a bet. I would bet that there is, unless you've bought new tires in the last 3 years, that your tires have aged out, meaning that they're more than 7 years old, or they have worn to the point where they need to be replaced. And lots of times people, you know, you don't just go out and every day look at your tires. And when you do look at your tires, you're seeing the outside tread. You're not seeing the inside tread. Now, if somebody is rotating your tires on a regular basis, like every 5,000 miles, like I recommend, then they hopefully they're seeing the condition of your tires, but maybe they're not noticing. Maybe you're just going to the Jiffy Lube place and having your oil changed, and you're really not getting your tires rotated. You're driving a front-wheel drive car, which pretty much guarantees that if you don't rotate your tires every 5,000 miles, then the front tires are going to be worn completely out in about 20,000 miles. Because the front tires on a front-wheel drive car do all of the pulling. They do 65 to 70% of the braking. They do all of the steering. And they take a beating. You know, let's just face it. And so if you don't rotate your tires, your front tires are getting all the wear. If you're driving a four-wheel drive vehicle or an all-wheel drive vehicle, then, you know, that changes the formula a little bit, but still, if you're not rotating your tires, you don't know. So the best way to do is just go out into your garage and or your driveway and just turn your steering wheel to the left, get out of the car, all the way to the left until it locks, get out of the car and look at the inside of your tread and make sure that you have some. Make sure that it's even across. And then turn your wheel all the way to the right and check the inside of the tread on the right side. And just make sure that you've got plenty of tread. Because if you get out on the road, as we were driving back from Cincinnati, you know, the average speed on the interstate is 85 miles an hour. And if you're not going 85, you better be in the slow lane. And when those big cars are passing you and trucks are passing you and stuff like that, and people are going that fast, and people aren't taking care of their tires, that's why you see blown out tires on the side of the road. It's not as common as it was many years ago. When we were riding on bias ply tires, these steel belted radials hold up pretty well. But when they get over 7 years old, they're vulnerable, very vulnerable. So check the age on your tires. If you don't know how to do that, there's a date code on your tire wall, on the sidewall, and you can just Google it. Just say, where's the date code on my tires? And it'll show you where they are. It's right there with the, well, it's kind of on the inside edge. It's not where the tire size is and everything, and it'll give you a date. It'll give you a month and a year that those tires were built. And if they're over 7 years old, you need to replace them. That's a fact. Okay, I'm willing to make you another bet. I'm willing to bet you that you are not a tremendous fan of fast food. Maybe you are, and maybe you shouldn't be, but you would rather not eat fast food. You would rather sit down to a nice restaurant and have a nice meal. Talk to your family, leave the cell phones in the car. That's probably what you would prefer. Well, I was driving down Church Street in Greenville. There's a fast lube place there on the corner. I saw this big line of cars waiting for their fast food version of automobile service. And just like a good restaurant versus a fast food restaurant, a fast lube place is not as good as a full service restaurant. They don't check as many things. They use generic oils. They use generic filters. And, you know, you don't need to get your oil changed there. You need to go to the dealership that sells the make of vehicle that you are driving. If you're driving a Hyundai and you're getting ready to go to the beach this year, take it to a Hyundai dealership and let them do a thorough examination of your vehicle. Make sure that your tires are in good shape, that you don't have any outstanding recalls, that if there's any service bulletins they need to take care of, they can do that. Those fast lube places are not doing that. They're just draining your oil, putting their generic, they're pumping out of 55-gallon drums, or putting a cheap filter on there, and they're not checking all the things that the dealer will check. And I hope I don't get sued. Of course, I didn't name anybody. I did say fast lube, so I think that's a generic enough term. But I'd be willing to bet that you're not taking care of your car the way you should. Probably not even as good as you did when you first bought it. You know, we kind of fall out of love with things at times. And that's one habit you need to break. You need to break yourself of the fast lube places. And do it now. If you're getting ready to go on a trip, you know, you got vacation plans in June, July, whatever, go ahead and get it done. Go to the dealership, call, make an appointment. I guarantee you that it will be the best thing that you could do for your car. Well, thanks for listening. Give me a call, 423-552-2020, or text if you prefer, or send me an email to LennyLawson2020@gmail.com, and I'll see you next time.